So last but not least, we have Otmar Edenhofer. Otmar is professor of economics at the Technical University of Berlin, and I think one of the leaders at the PIC, the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research.
Yeah,
and you are also now the chairman of an EU committee in charge of advising the EU parliaments on climate policies.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, thanks a lot for the invitation. And I decided to talk about Putin's war, distributional justice, and climate policy options. And I intend to apply an optimal taxation framework to analyze this problem at least a little bit. And I admit this has very much a German flavor, because in Germany we have a very intense debate. Why Germany becomes so dependent on Russian gas and oil and even on coal. And so we had a very intense discussion about an embargo, and it's still ongoing. And interestingly enough, this is not just a debate among policymakers, strategists, it's also very much economists are involved in this debate. And so this is an important aspect, and therefore I would like to make three points here. First, I intend to highlight to what extent Putin's war in the Ukraine challenges, so to say, the energy plans in Europe and in Germany. Then this allows me to talk about the short-term welfare effects of an immediate energy price shock, here which is like on the German debate. And this allows me also to introduce my optimal taxation framework. And then in the midterm, I add to this optimal taxation framework an energy supply model and analyze, so what could be the impact on taxing oil and gas from Russia, and what is the option, so to say, to enhance the fiscal space for Germany. So I will not talk about to what extent pricing or taxing Russian oil and gas will have an impact on Russia or on Putin's government. So this is beyond my talk, the scope of my talk. Now let me start with that. So what we have seen so far is a massive energy price inflation compared to other prices. Even the gas prices had a much faster and higher growth rate than the coal price. This brought back the renaissance of coal, not only in Asia, but also in Europe and even in Germany. Now we are discussing heavily to bring coal back into the electricity system. But this is not only the aspect. The other aspect is this kind of energy price increase also has a huge potential to exaggerate the negative distributional effects on the households. And here I would like to emphasize two dimensions. The one is the difference between the rich and the poor households, but also the difference between the energy efficient and the energy intense households. Low-income households spend about 10% of their income of energy, and richer households only 3%. And within each income group, there are households with high energy expenditures, but especially among the poor households. So you put it in a different way, the poor households have a lower capability to transform primary energy into energy services. In addition to that, so in Europe, but also in Germany, we have quite ambitious goals, carbon neutrality by 2045, and the whole compensation issue will also be quite important for that. But at least what we can observe here is that we see, if we want to be consistent with these climate goals, a carbon price between 130 and 300 euros per ton CO2. And then we have introduced also some kind of national CO2 pricing schemes. It's also quite important to know that today the European Parliament has basically rejected the Fit for 55 package. And also this, nobody knows what will happen with the European emission trading scheme, but so that's also, I would say, a typical German and European situation, that we have enormously ambitious goals, but we do not care too much about the policy instruments which would allow us to achieve that. And then there are two different dimensions of equity. One is the vertical equity between the poor and the middle class households, but also another dimension here, which is the horizontal equity. So when we think about energy efficient and energy intensive households, in particular hardship households, and you have seen in the empirical data that within each income class there is a huge spread, even within income class, between this energy efficient and energy intensive households. Now, what we have done here is we tried to bring together this both dimensions of horizontal and vertical equity into a consistent welfare economic framework. And this optimal taxation framework has two dimensions. The very conventional one, so there is labor productivity, or households are endowed with labor productivity. There are 10 vertical income deciles, but there is also 10 horizontal and efficient efficiency deciles, where basically households have a different capability to transform raw energy or primary energy into the energy services. Households consume a numerair, they have leisure time, and they have also the energy services. The government raise revenues through the labor income and carbon taxation and redistribute it to the households, for example, via lump sum taxation, lump sum transfers, but I will talk a little bit about more about the different schemes to recycle the revenues back. And then there's a social welfare function, and this welfare function has a parameter, a normative parameter, the Atkinson parameter SETA, which expresses the inequality aversion, and we have calibrated this model to the German household data. So this is the novelty here is just to introduce here or include here the energy efficiency component. And here, let me highlight this component because the other one is quite conventional for optimal taxation framework. So first of all, we have a carbon tax. The carbon tax in this model does not reflect the social costs of carbon, because in the German context, so the shadow price reflects an emission target. So then the income taxes and the transfer correct for income inequality, for the vertical effects of the energy prices and the horizontal effect of the energy prices. And here I would like to highlight here that reducing the inequality among the households according to energy efficiency is not always beneficial, because when we would reduce this dimension of inequality, so then we would increase equality, but on the other hand, we would reduce efficiency, because what we would like to see is that the households which have a higher capability to transform primary energy and energy service could do this, and these are very often the more prosperous households. So there is here also a trade-off between energy efficiency and the equality or equity, and this has to be taken into account. Now let me highlight here an important aspect here. So there is, of course, potentially the possibility to achieve a first best optimum with a uniform carbon price across all the sectors, and also with a targeted transfer. If you have all the information about the households, then you can target all the transfers, and then you can, the green line, this is the benchmark, then you can achieve the first best optimum. If you cannot do this because of information asymmetries, so then you have other options, for example, a targeted energy subsidy or a uniform subsidy on renewables. And then it is quite important that when inequality aversion is increasing, so then the welfare losses are also increasing, because the more you want to reduce vertical and horizontal equity, so the more you do not allow the more efficient households to do the transformation job. So, and then you can see here basically a targeted energy subsidy has relatively less welfare losses, a uniform subsidy on renewables has relatively high welfare losses. And so here I would like to highlight that from a purely equity point of view, It can be beneficial if you have not the potential of a targeted transfer, that you basically subsidize, in particular, the poor households, the energy, so then they can afford the clean energy dependent on the inequality aversion. But even if you have a high inequality aversion, so only roughly 15% of the revenues should be spent on such targeted subsidies, not too much, and the rest should be done by transfer. So to a certain extent, the conventional wisdom of economics that you should use direct income transfers still holds, but dependent on the inequality aversion. Now let me come a little bit now to the short-term effects here. So indeed, we had a very heated debate in Germany among economists, and also very important economists from the US participated in this debate. There was a famous paper, Bachmann et al., which estimates the average per household costs around 1,000 euros per year. And so this was a very interesting debate. So what I would like to do is that here to calculate the welfare costs. So what you see on the x-axis, these are the aggregated monetized welfare costs in percent of the aggregate household expenditures. And so we measured here the welfare costs using the equivalent variations. So the amount of money that must be given to households such that they are indifferent between the situation with and without an energy price shock. And again, so you have to pay a price if you want to increase the increase the equality or reduce the inequality. So the welfare costs are monetized, and so to say, it's 4% for low inequality aversion and 90% for high inequality aversion. And you put this here on the table a little bit in a disaggregated way. You can see here, this is the upper bound of the Bachmann paper, around 1,000 euros per year. And here you see basically the different expenditures, which reflects the income deciles and then also the variation within the deciles. So these are the absolute variations, and these are here the percentages, the variations as a share of the expenditure share per year. So, and then we could do also here different policy packages, a 1% increase in the marginal labor tax, and then this can be used for the redistribution of the revenues, for example, household-specific perfect targeting, the red one. And then the other one, a simple equal recycling per capita. So this reduces then the costs significantly. So now in Germany, we are designing, in particular for the next few months, packages which come close to a combination of price policies, but also it might have some component of what we call a climate transfer, which is very close to an equal per capita recycling. Now, how could we now think about this whole gas embargo issue into the game in this model. So what we did here is we included here a fossil energy supply model. And there's a fossil energy supply from Russia and from other countries. So then we have here an elasticity of 0.1. This is just for illustration and needs much more variation because we do not really know what is the supply elasticity, but this is something reasonable here, at least a kind of an educated guess. But again, so this requires some variation and some sensitivity studies. So then we determine here the endogenous price for the fossil fuels, and we impose an exogenous import tariff. So the import tariff is not part of the optimization procedure, but what is part of the optimization procedure is the optimal carbon tax. So in here, we have this simple supply model. So this is something what an import tariff can do. Of course, a prohibitive import tariff is a full embargo, But there are different gradual steps between doing nothing and imposing an embargo on the economy. And here we have basically calculated the cent per kilowatt hours. And also, this the increase of the import tariff leads to a reduction of emissions. So this is the CO2 emissions compared to the business as usual scenario. And then we can derive from that a kind of a Laffer curve, where we have an import tariff which leads to a maximum of tax revenues. And so then when the import tariffs become too high, so then the revenues, and this is the revenues, let's say, for the German or the European economy, might decline. Now, what happens then in this model is that let's assume that we have an embargo soft, which is a 50% ban. So then what we see here is with a 0.5% labor tax increase, an equal per capita rebate, then we can even have a net benefit, so to say, in particular for the 1.1% labor tax increase. And here you have the equal per household rebates for the different policies which I have described so far. Now, what happens is when we basically combine this with an import tariff, a 50% ban, so then we could recycle 500 euros per ton CO2 in the case of a 1% labor tax, or roughly a little bit below 200 euros per ton CO2 when we have a 0.5% labor tax. So, and this is also quite interesting. If we have a 90% ban, so then you are not in a position to better off the households, because then this ban is too hard and brings too much welfare losses for the economy. So the model does not say anything. So what will be the damages for the Russian government or for Putin? But at least it shows that the 90% ban might be quite demanding. And if you look at here the distribution, you see here basically in the case of a no policy with a 50% ban, basically no one can be better off. For a 1% labor tax increase, an equal per capita rebate, so at least 34% are better off. And in the case of a 1% labor tax import tariff, an equal per capita distribution, 70% of the households can be better off. So that's a quite important aspect here. And here, this is another, seems to me an obvious thing, but nevertheless in the current debate important. So there is a trade-off between the import tariff and a carbon tax or a carbon price. Because the carbon tax here is calculated in an optimal way given the exogenous given import tariff. But still, so when you cannot afford a high carbon tax, and it seems that the European Parliament feels a high carbon price in the emissions trading scheme is not appropriate, but at least you can increase the import tariff. And the import tariff will impose some additional price on oil and gas. And the second emissions trading scheme in Europe, for example, would be fundamentally an emissions trading scheme for transport, building and roads, which is an emissions trading scheme for oil and gas. So, and here the target is also given, it's a 30% reduction of the aggregate emissions in Germany. So if we take into account a specific import tariff and then the optimized carbon price, so then we ask the question, what is the optimal tax system, the optimal income taxation for such a situation? And here we come to that conclusion that this would also imply some kind of a tax reform. So you see here the business as usual scenario, which is very consistent with the current income taxation system in Germany. And if you do this, if you have an optimal taxation of carbon, impose a tariff and also optimize your recycling scheme, so then you get a marginal income tax profile, which is, by the way, on the table of many political parties, at least in Germany, to move along these lines, which basically means that a cleverly designed carbon tax, an import tariff, and a recycling scheme would allow at least us to do such a thing. So the message here is the revenue from carbon tax and import tariff enables a labor income tax cut, at least for the middle class. And so to say, this is a very famous phrase in German. So we say we want to reduce the Mittelstandsbauch, because which means basically we want to make the middle class a little bit taller and a little bit more fit for purpose. Now let me then conclude here what I would like to convey in this presentation. So Putin's war in the Ukraine exaggerates the challenges for a just transition. Both the vertical and horizontal equity matters, and it seems for policymakers both aspects are very important. We develop here a coherent welfare economic modeling framework to analyze the distributional consequences and policy options, in particular to combine horizontal and vertical equity. Targeted policies can alleviate negative distributional effects and improve welfare, and the combination of a tariff on Russian energy imports and national carbon prices can generate fiscal flexibility to help households and also, by the way, to achieve our climate policy goals. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Otmar.